Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And this is really a show I'm looking forward to. Joan Anderson, who has been a guest on my show before, as I've been reminding you, she has written a number of books about angels. She has written an award-winning book regarding Loretta Young. She's been on bestseller lists. But this book that she put out, when I received it a few months back, I said, this is perfect for Mother's Day. It's Moms Go Where Angels Fear to Tread, Adventures in Motherhood. So Mom's Day is coming up on Sunday. This would be a wonderful gift to give to your favorite mom in your life. Young, old, grandma, grandpa, you know, I don't care. Grandpas can be included periodically. I threw that in. But seriously, this is a wonderful book. It has got so much fun in it. And I want to welcome Joan Anderson to the show.
Well, thank you. It's great to be talking to you again.
Well, Joan, I have to find out why you decided to do this, because you have had such a marvelous writing career doing so many different things, and yet you took on this project, and I love it. I mean, I was laughing throughout parts of the book, and I just it brought back memories for me. I think anyone who's ever been a mom would read it, and you know, grandmas would love it, aunties would love it. I just think it's just marvelous. What made you decide you were going to put down your real-life stories here?
You know, it was the strangest amount of timing, I think. I was sitting one day. Well, my husband had come down and looked at my office. That really started the whole thing. And he wanted to know what color my carpeting was, and I didn't know because I was just, It just, there were too many piles of things all over. And I said, I'm trying to get organized, famous last words, but what I really don't want to do is discard things that I've written because the kids, you know, were so much younger then that a lot of times they didn't pay any attention to what I was doing. But now here I have this whole 30 years worth of writing. Shouldn't I be putting this away for them? So we kind of thought, wouldn't it be funny if we took all those columns that I had written about them and kind of worked them into a book? And as it turned out, there was so much there that I actually was able to do two books. And Guidepost bought them both, so there's a sequel coming next year where the characters in the book start from a little bit older than they were in this one. And they go on, and the book ends with the first wedding. So, you know, it's the beginning of the end for Mom, and it hopefully it's kind of touching. But in any event, this created two things for me. It gave me, you know, a reason to clean up my floor so that I understand now that the carpet is pink. I didn't really know that. And the other thing was that I got two memorable books for my children so that when they are raising their children, which they are doing now, you know, they can tell them a lot about their own life.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, they'll be forced to remember some things that
they will
rather forget.
So when I look back and I think how funny it was when I first started writing, my husband and I were, you know, at odds over what I was going to be writing. Like, how much of the family truth was I going to be explaining to people? How personal did this get? And of course, it takes a while to figure these things out because I was very new at writing, didn't really know how to market my material or anything. But one day I got something published in the Chicago Daily News. And I mean, I was just thrilled. It was a morning paper and it came and there I am, I'm reading it. And I can't believe that it's my own name. You know, anyone who has ever had this happen knows how you feel. But my husband was looking out the window, and he said, look, see these cars going by? And I said, yeah. He said, they're slowing down when they get to our house. They've all read about our family, and now I'm sure that we're going to have nothing but, you know, people ringing our doorbells and all this. I couldn't believe that anything like that would happen. But it bothered me because I thought, well, gosh, maybe I'm giving away our privacy, you know. And about 10 minutes later, one of my neighbors came over and she said, we have an awful lot of traffic on our street today. And my husband started to tell her, yeah, you want to know why? And she said, because there's this big detour up on the other end of it. So it just had nothing to do with me. And I was able to tell him that for the next 35 years, it's got nothing to do with you.
Don't you just love it? That was a humbling moment. Oh, I love those things. Well, the book starts out, your very first paragraph, I think is priceless, and I'm going to read it verbatim. One of your firmest beliefs is that every couple contemplating holy wedlock should be required to undergo intensive training. We have schools to teach every other skill. Why not demand a mini diploma before John and Jane are permitted to register their preferences at Target and check honeymoon rates to Cancun? I agree. You haven't a clue. I don't know that it's going to make any difference, but there is no clue. And all of us, at some time or another, will raise our hands and said, boy, was I dumb.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that the truth? And yet we stumble and stagger through it, and it seems to work out. It's just I have a daughter-in-law now who is she's not working anymore because she has two little preschoolers, but before she was working at a cancer clinic at a very well-known hospital, and she said to me in a look of complete bewilderment, she said, I can tear the heads off of rats.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, don't tell me that. She said, but I can't get this baby to go to sleep. And it was kind of like we're trained for everything else. But and she was being made aware of what she considered to be a loss of some sort. Like, you know, has my brain just dried up? What's wrong with me? Why can't I control my environment? And I said, because, you know, your environment has changed now. It's not just you and the rats. It's, you know, some other little people around here, too. And I think that's kind of difficult. Nobody really tells moms today that it's not anything that you're getting out of books, really. It's, you know, your house is going to be a whole lot different than you planned, and that's all right.
Yes, you bring in puppies, kitties, and kids, and you will never, ever have total order. I don't care.
Never.
You can watch every Donna Reed show that published or any of these things you watch on television, and I can guarantee you, you will have one of them throw up right of your kids, your dog, your cat. Something's going to throw up right in front of you after you've just washed the floor and your back is killing you and you've just gotten everything done and you go, thank you. That's what I really needed.
Thank you so much. I remember one of my children, I had the four boys in 5 years, so it was a zoo most of the time. And I remember I was having some people over and I, you know, you give the baths at 3 o'clock. And feed them at 4:30 so that you can, you know, by the time people are ready to come in the house, the kids should be asleep. Well, while I was readying some last-minute things, one of them found a wastebasket that I had forgotten about, and he emptied it in the middle of the living room, and it had all kinds of little things. And I looked at for one thing, when I think of it now, why would anyone cry over a wastebasket? But it had been one of those days, and it was the last straw. And I just looked at it and I cried. And the kids, of course, I raised them with guilt therapy, as I always say. So they were guilted into it, and they all ran around real fast and picked everything up and put it back. And then they presented the full wastebasket to me. And the oldest one said, aren't you glad you have boys, Mommy? Who else would have picked up that mess? And, of course, my first thought was, if I didn't have boys, I wouldn't have the mess, you know. But I tactfully, it didn't seem as though I should actually say that. But these are the things, you know, that you can plan and do everything, and yet it just doesn't work out, and you might as well enjoy it because it's not going to be your way.
Right, and you might as well have a good sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yes,
the universe definitely
like to,
has one. Yes.
I like to hang with women that are very funny.
Mm-hmm.
you know, this morning I went out to breakfast with two of my dearest friends. We've lived in the same neighborhood for 35 years, raised our children and everything, and we're still laughing at each other because we're three completely different people. And they're all talking about some knitting club that they belong to, and of course they look at me and laugh because I can't thread a needle, you know, and yet there they are. They're all excited about these new fabrics and everything. But while we're doing it, we're enjoying the fact that I don't, you know, they don't even want me to come. Don't come, because you wouldn't know the first thing about it and you'll be bored right out of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful to have women friends like that who accept you the way you are. And, you know, their children, they will tell you just how awful they were today, not trying to make it sound as if they're a better mother than you are. You know, you can just let it all hang out, which was an old expression, but it kind of, those are the kind of women that you need in your life. And I always tell younger women, friends are, you know, the gold in your life. Be sure that you cultivate them and be a friend to them, too.
Yes, and one of the things, when you are a mom, there's so much, and I think over the years this has changed a little bit, but I see still young women going through the same thing, and I'm, you know, I watch them in the stores, and I see these beautiful children, and then all of a sudden they turn into the monsters from hell.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I don't have to deal with that anymore.
Oh, yes. Oh,
and
yes.
These little angels will look up, and all of a sudden the thumb goes in the mouth, and the teary eyes are there, and
mm-hmm.
you start talking to them, and they're analyzing you. It's like, okay, who is this person? What do I do? What strategy do I use? Do you think a temper tantrum will work at this moment? No, I don't think so. What do I mean, they're thinking every single second.
The wheels.
They
quick,
are thinking
don't they?
Every single second. And one of the things that I can remember someone, a mother expressing, they often, when they would get criticisms from people, and there have been a lot of things that have changed regarding social training, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of times in today's world, I think many of the young parents wish they had mature people around them that could help them, or where they could get some support or they could talk to and laugh instead of cry and not
yes.
feel so alone. Because mm-hmm. there is that environment where young moms, they just say, I don't want to admit that I don't know what to do. I'm scared to death. I'm frightened.
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, I've got mom and dad over here, or maybe I've got in-laws over there, or I've got something going on. You bring out so many points in your book that I think are a lot of fun. And one is naming a baby. And for those young moms, I loved this one, because in one comment on your chapter on this, you said, you want to check out the durability of a name. A good way to do it is to stand at an open window and yell the name into the sunset, because you're going to be doing that frequently as baby explores the neighborhood. So it's good to get in shape before the baby's born. And think of the name you give him. We both have autographed books till the cows have come home. And the thing is that when you ask if they want names of children, because I have children's books, the names, the spelling, the pronunciations,
yes.
and you go, my God, you gave your poor child this name. How are
yes.
you going to deal with this? So let's go into that a little bit, because
spelling.
That's something that every mother worries about.
Well, the reason why I thought they should stand at the back door and yell is because that's the way their child is going to be addressed by a lot of people. And you want something that's appropriate for their younger days, but also something that they're not going to look ridiculous in when they're 65 or 70. And, you know, I said I think we're going to have a lot of Grandma Ashleys out there, because, you know, Ashley was a very popular name of 10 years
mm-hmm.
ago or so. And so they will all kind of meet one another again when they're 65 or 70 and saying, how do you like this, you know, this name now? But I can remember, you know, some of the names that were popular when I was a child have faded away. And, you know, there's a lot of time that went by through that era. And then now these names, you see them coming back. And they're so sweet, you know, Emily and Grace and names like that that were very old-fashioned, you know, when I was young. Or there was a big run on Joan when I was born, and my mother told me she named me after Joan Crawford. And I said, Mommy Dearest. So
that's feel good.
Who my children called me, Mommy Dearest, all that.
Have to be careful about those things.
Yeah, you know, you have to kind of give it some thought. But you can't lock yourself into, you know, like naming every child with the same letter. You know that family that's on TV, the Duggars? I think it's Duggar. They have 19 children, and they're all, their first names all start with J.
Oh, Lord. And I knew somebody else that did that with a W or something. Oh,
yeah.
Drives you nuts. I've got a family of four M&Ms. It's the M&M family. They call them because they all start with the letter M.
Well, you know, it probably sounds cute when you first start, but as I mentioned in the book, I had a roommate who had just had her eighth boy, and she said it sounded so funny when we first got started with Jim and Jack and John. She said, how did we know that, you know, 10 years later we were still going to be looking through baby books looking for a J, because you can't stop once you've gotten started. So that was the lesson I took with me. That was my first baby, and watching her go through with her eighth, I thought, no, we're not going to start on any of this. But these are things no one ever tells you.
Well, again, you've got such a sense of humor with all of this, and I think that this just relates to so many practical stuff. And you do have to laugh at this. You really, if you can't laugh at some of these things, if you want to have a good cry, have a good cry. But trust me, 10 years later, you're going to be telling your kids, have I got a story about you?
Oh,
wait until the grandchild comes along. Don't hand me any of this stuff. I'll tell you what you put me through. And it's there. I loved your story on being careful what you pray for. And it's all about a gerbil. I love this one. Tell us about the gerbil.
Oh, the gerbil. Oh, my gosh. I totally forgot about him. Well, the kids have been on me for a long time for a pet. Especially my one child wanted a dog so much, and I'm very allergic to most animals, and I just, you know, kept saying no. So finally my husband comes home with an aquarium with no water in it and some little interesting things, and inside is a rodent. And of course I'm hysterical right away. What is this? And he said, well, these are cute. They're not hamsters. They're gerbils. And really, believe it or not, I guess I'm really dating myself, but we had never really seen gerbils too much there. So, and my husband pointed out that they have a gift about them. They are small and they stay in the same place. So I wouldn't have to worry too much about, you know, dogs or anything. So about maybe a week later, our son, who was thrilled with the gerbil, came in and screaming and yelling and bouncing on our bed. He's saying, 13. I have 13 gerbils now.
Best laid plans, right?
Yeah, you can build an addition onto the garage. And he's thinking about, you know, raising them and everything. And I just wanted to find a frying pan to crash it over my husband's head, who said this was a great idea. So I'm not sure if that's the gerbil story you remembered, but
that's the one I remember. And there is a paragraph where, and I'm just going to again relate it, that whenever you and God are having a conversation and you say, when the garden looks a bit arid and all of a sudden we get a 3-day monsoon that reduces my housebound offspring to a whining choir, I wonder where our communication is broken down. And when I pray for a child who seems a little withdrawn, and later her exhausted teacher asks if I'm slipping stimulants into her morning orange juice, I wonder where my dialogues have been.
You got to be really specific with God.
Yeah.
Well, I remember that one. That was because I had been kind of, you know, I asked God, do you want me to do this or do you want me not to? I mean, is it okay if I do this? And, you know, people always say God speaks to me. God does not speak to me. People speak to me, and sometimes I get, you know, word from God through people. But basically speaking, he doesn't usually give me any answers to anything. And I've been told that's kind of like he's saying, whatever. You can kind of do what you want. It's all right. It's not a major moral question here. So this is what I was talking to him about that day. I said, you know, I asked you if I should start writing, and, you know, you didn't say no. I don't know if I'm on the right path or not. How about a little cash? because I had started writing because we needed money. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with needing money, and there's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with trying to fix that problem a little bit. But I just hadn't heard anything from him at all. So a couple of days later, I get one of these thin envelopes. Now, that's always, that's not your manuscript being sent back. That's an actual letter from a publisher. And right away, my heart starts to beat, and I can tell there's a check inside. Well, of course, you know, I slide it out, and I can't remember the amount. It was probably $7, something like that. It was some very tiny, wouldn't have gotten us through the supermarket if we were just coming in to use the bathroom. And I could just hear God saying, well, you asked for a little cash. And I thought, maybe you got to be really specific with him after this. So I didn't say, how about a little cash anymore. I said, how about a lot?
How about a lot? And then we had mm-hmm. some changes come in. You know, we were talking earlier about being with friends, and I think when you're raising kids, there are certain patternings that you have, and I know that I had one. I can remember when my husband and I were first married, because my daughter usually was sitting up in the front seat with me. I was a single mom for a lot of years. And, of course, the natural thing you do is put your arm out to protect mm-hmm. your child. You know, the seatbelts are no, it's just something that you do.
Yes.
And I'll never forget when he was sitting as a passenger that there'd be certain things, boom, that arm would go out. And he'd say, wait a minute. His hair was knocked out.
Isn't that funny?
He'd go, excuse me, you do not need to do this anymore. He's in the back seat. I'm in the front seat. And we do things, and I just got so chuckled because when you went out to lunch with your friends,
oh.
you hadn't been out for a long time, your friends were so kind, and I just thought this was so cute, but you didn't know exactly how to react this first time that you went out because you had five friends with you, and there was a man that you were following, and I just love this. And you asked him, why are we following him? And your friend turned around you so sweetly and said, sweetie, this is a waiter. He brings our food. And you said, we don't have to cook it ourselves. And I'm relating to this, and I'm reading this stuff,
yes.
and I'm going, this is so cool. But what I really liked is when she said, sweetheart, I mean, she's patting you on the hand, it isn't necessary to tuck a bib under my chin. I know it's difficult to get to use the pantyhose in daylight, but you are in the adult world now with life-size people, and you can eat anything you want and even say anything you want. And I thought, this is really something. I was in a restaurant when just around some young families, and I was listening to the conversation, and it's very tough. I mean, when you have little ones, there's the baby talk, there's all of this, and before you know it, you're talking the same way to all of the adults that are around you, whoever might be with you. And the women understand completely if they've ever had kids. But the men just sort of roll.
Oh, on. I know. I can remember once, it's not in the book, but one of my dearest friends, she really could make a joke out of practically anything because she always did everything with a straight face, and you didn't know if it was true or not, but she said, she promised me it was true that one night when she got out, it was kind of like this, where she had to be taken into the home and introduced to life-size people and everything else, and oh, we can actually talk without being interrupted. It was one of those amazing nights, and she said she sat down and they did not have them paired up with their spouses.
Mm-hmm.
They just had, you know, three women and three men at one table. And she said she reached over and cut the meat of the man sitting next to her. She said it was just one of those things. She had three little boys, and she's chatting away. And she said it would have been so bad if I had cut the meat of somebody that I knew. But sitting at a table with, you know, five strangers,
oh, that poor thing.
Mm-hmm. She took her a while to live that down, but
I bet, but I guarantee you that guy had something to talk about for months.
Oh my gosh, yes. And she's the same one that I hope I can remember this. we did an experiment one night. We were invited over to someone's house, and this probably dates me considerably because this would not even be a subject for discussion right now in this day and age. But then we were noticing that housewives had no status when it came time to, you know, ask what is it that you do?
And mm-hmm, that's
so
true.
Lynn said to me, let's do it this way. She said, let's make up some really important sounding name for what we do. Well, it took us all day long, but we finally did it. And then what we were going to do was when someone asked me what I did, I would say I'm a housewife. And we wanted to watch how quickly, you know, the eyes closed and the snoring started. And so that's what we did. And the first fella said to me, so what do you do, Joan? And I said, well, I'm a housewife. And he left to get some chip dip, never looked back. And someone else asked Lynn, and she said she was an inventory control specialist.
And oh, that's good. I like
and
that
I
one.
Said,
we have
Lynn,
to remember
I love
that, one.
That. She said it took her all day to figure it out, but that isn't she an inventory control specialist? Of course she is. Mom, where's my shirt? Where's my shoes? Where's my this? Where's my that? But the thing that we enjoyed the most was that our theory was correct and that people started talking to Lynn, not to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, well, everybody knows what she does. And I fear that that attitude is still out there at some times.
It is.
And it's
it
too
is.
Bad
Very
because,
so.
You know, people may pay lip service to it by saying, you're doing the most important job in the world, but they don't really, they're not interested in what you do because they can't figure out how it takes you all day to do it. And yet, mm-hmm. sometimes you can end up starting farther back than you were today. You know, you're going backwards instead of forwards.
Mm-hmm.
And how can you ever explain that to anyone?
It is a very strong reality in today's world. And when you think about what you're saying, Joan, about, you know, when you had your small children and there was an attitude, well, if you're just a housewife, sweetie, you probably don't have the brains of a flea
mm-hmm.
because you, you know, probably do something else. That is very strong today. And there's a lot of young women that really are torn apart because they want to be at home with their family. Maybe
yes.
they've got to work. And people will say, as soon as you say you're a mom, a lot of people yawn because
yes.
they just don't think that you have 50 cents worth of brains,
mm-hmm.
but more than that, and I know there's some women that may be disagreeing with me, but if you say, well, I'm an executive, a VP at the Forbes 500 for pantyhose, then they get all excited.
Mm-hmm.
And it still is a patterning that people have. So I think what your friend did, it's like I remember doing an article years ago about a household executive. And a woman had put something together, and she specifically said it. And, boys, people sat up and paid attention. And then they finally
yeah.
dawned on them that she was the mother of five children,
mm-hmm.
and she
mm-hmm.
had to run her household like you had to run any kind of a business because you had to account for things. You had your budgeting. You had to take care of responsibilities. And people don't realize it until they're doing it. And that's why men say, thank you, I always need a wife.
Yes, I always say that I need a wife, too.
Oh, I agree. Someone once told me that. They said, Donna, you don't need to have a housekeeper. You need a wife to take
yeah.
care of the things.
Because she'll go and pick up your dry cleaning, too. She...
Well, Joan, this book is loaded with so many fun things. And before we went on the air, I just love this one section that you said, you're known as Rachel Ray's alter ego. You hate cooking, and the very sight of a toaster can throw you into a cardiac arrest. Your recipe file contains only dishes involving three ingredients or less.
That's
and when
right.
you're really desperate, you serve ketchup as a vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for those health fattists out there, it's okay. Her kids are surviving very well. They're having their own. And she's still writing about this stuff. And I'm so glad you picked this up off your pink carpet and decided to put it into a book.
Oh, I am too. It was a lovely walk down memory lane. And it brought me back to those days and the feelings associated with those days. And I just thought, gosh, I hope today's moms are getting all the approval and the encouragement that they need. Because, you know, it can be very bewildering, especially when they go into the teen years and all of that, but basically any time.
That's the truth. Joan, now do you have a website relative
mm-hmm.
to this book? Okay,
sure.
And what is the website?
It's you can do the www if you want, joanwanderson.com.
Joan W. Anderson, and that's A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N
right.
.com. The book, this would make a fabulous gift for any mom. It's just terrific. Moms Go Where Angels Fear to Tread, Adventures in Motherhood. Mother's Day is coming up this coming Sunday, and this is just charming. You'll smile, you'll go down memory lane, but more than anything else, it's written with warmth, with love, and with a lot of personal experience behind it. And, Joan, it's a gift. And I thank you so much for being my guest today.
Well, thank you. It was good to talk to you again.
As always, I look forward to your next book. This is Donna Sebald. Don't forget, joanwanderson.com is the website. The book is Moms Go Where Angels Fear to Tread by Joan Wester Anderson. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebald. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, it's Donna. I'm back, and phone lines are now open. Give us a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the toll-free worldwide telephone number to utilize, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I wanted to share a couple of tidbits with you. And by the way, if you call in, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then after that, just sit back, let me tell you what I perceive, and then, of course, you're welcome to ask a question about anything that you like. Are you aware that when you drive, some of the most, dangerous times of driving are not when you're out on the freeway? They are not actually where you probably would think they would be. where it is most dangerous for you to drive are the roads that you know the best or even travel every day. Now, I remember when I worked for an insurance agency a number of years ago, most accidents that were reported happened within 3 miles of home. Well, I guess things haven't changed a lot because there's a team of German scientists who monitored brains of volunteers who were driving computer-simulated models. What they discovered really surprised them. They found that volunteers, the brains, were less active when they were on autopilot while they were on familiar roads, meaning they were not able to respond as quickly in an emergency as they would perhaps when they were driving on roads that they were not familiar with. Now, what they found when they had these same people navigating unfamiliar routes, their brains were just working overtime. They were alert, and they were able to dodge unexpected dangers. So, this is what these researchers are recommending. Change your drive routes frequently, or boost your attentiveness. If you've got certain routes you have to take, I know in my neighborhood there are only like 2 options, but if you have to take a certain route, let's say you're driving on the freeway, you want to play music, you want to chew gum, do something that is going to keep you alert. Don't Twitter away on your little handheld computer. Is that what we're talking about? We're having more and more accidents from people that are not paying attention. And they're either on a cell phone, they're distracted, or they're texting. And that just boggles my mind. Because you really do need to pay attention. If you're on a freeway, you need to pay attention. So this is research when things are really, really familiar, we don't see what we should be seeing. So it's a good idea to stay alert, stay aware, and pay attention. Because we do spend a lot of time in our automobiles. Also, if you're wanting to really be able to read a person, find out whether they're telling the truth or not, well, there's been some experiments done recently that reveal when people sit in a dimly lit room or if they're wearing dark sunglasses indoors, they're more likely to not tell the truth or exaggerate than if a room is brightly lit or they're not wearing sunglasses. Now, this came from the Journal of Psychological Science. So if you're in a low light or wearing dark shades or seeing or being with someone that is deliberately choosing that kind of an environment, just be aware that lots of times they feel like they cannot be perceived very, very well. It's an old trick. It's not a new one. And that's why people usually have a natural suspicion when they have someone that's sitting in front of them in an environment that doesn't require sunglasses, so that they're wearing them. They're usually not going to be as open with people. And I know that many times people that have vision problems will wear glasses. That's different. You expect that of them. But many times, I've encountered a lot of individuals through the years that is something that they do, and they're really trying to hide something. They don't want to look you straight in the eye. And I know in some cultures, looking someone straight in the eye is not a good thing. But among those of us in America, that is something. We want that clarity. We want that openness. We want to be able to see what's right there in front of us. And, of course, there's that old adage that the eyes are the windows to the soul, and that's very true. By the way, I do want to mention to you, if you have a story regarding the paranormal, please write it down and send it to me. I'm compiling a file. Right now we have about 25 stories together, and it's growing. My goal is to attain 100, and I'd love to have yours. If you've seen a ghost, if you've gone through a unique experience of some kind that's been life-changing, won't you send it to me? I'd love to have it added to my group of stories. And we will also need to have your contact information. You can send it to me via snail mail or email, and you send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. And again, I need your contact information. Be sure you put in the subject line, Donna's book, story for Donna's book, or the equivalent, so that I can identify it. I get so much junk mail, and I know you all do too, so lots of times if there's that identification there, it really makes it easy for me to pull that out right away. So do that for me. Excuse me. Being that Mother's Day is coming up, I wanted to share a story with you that is done by Christine West, and this is a true story. She lives in Kentucky, and she was sitting with four adorable kids, and they were saying, "Grandma, Grandma, tell us a story." And they were all looking up at her, you know, expectantly. And then they were interrupted by clapping, and what was going on? She was on stage. She was playing the role of a grandmother, and the director was very pleased. But the kids, he wanted them to do something differently so that they would be more visible to the audience. This was a church play that was going on. And, of course, this woman, whose name again is Christine, was playing the grandma. And she said, well, she was sitting there going through all of this. She felt a twinge of sadness that just seemed to get a little bit bigger, and she sort of had to suppress it because she had a grandchild, but she had never met her. And this granddaughter was a little bit over 16 years of age. She said her son had gotten involved with a woman that ended very, very badly. And there was a beautiful baby girl whose name was Lena. And she had always wanted to be a grandma to her. But right after the birth, the mother had moved away, left no forwarding address, and her son never was able to find out where the daughter was. So she would ask around, try to find out if anybody knew where the girl had gone, etc. But nobody ever gave her any information. And she had just joined this church. And she said she hadn't been with him but just for a week. And because of this play coming up, they felt she was a perfect fit for playing a grandma. And she said, okay, I'll play the part. I am a grandma, but I never have been able to really be a grandmother. And when the day of the show arrived, she really was pleased because all the rehearsals had gone well, and everybody said after the performance that it was just absolutely awesome. The kids, her, everything was just wonderful in the production. Well, like so often happens at churches, you have a basement area or a hall where you go to for refreshments, and that was where everybody went. And she happened to walk over to one of the girls that was in the play. She said, we had never had a chance to interact, and this was a teenager, and she walked up to her and said, well, how's my granddaughter? And this girl responded back, and she said, I'm just fine. And then just someone else happened to walk up and called the girl by name. Well, Christine's ears perked up, and she said, what is your mom's name? And the girl told her. And she said, you know your dad's name? And the girl told her. As it turned out, it was Christine's son. So in that moment, she said, Lena, I'm going to tell you, you're not going to believe this, but I really am your grandmother. Now, the interesting thing about this story is that Lena had only started going to that church a week before Christine had started. And she said, just recently, I've become a great-grandma. So you never know how the universe is going to work. A woman who never thought she'd get to know her granddaughter was able to do that, and the circumstances were just extremely special. So I wanted to share that. Again, I think it's a wonderful story. We have Mother's Day coming up, and it's a good holiday to celebrate, and I hope wherever you are, whatever you're doing, that the mother in your life or that woman in your life that you would like to honor on this Mother's Day is going to be someone that's going to be so appreciative of the fact that you take time out to remember her and to think of her, because that's really such a good feeling when you're acknowledged and you're recognized. And I'm glad that you're going to be doing it. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're going to be going on a break in just a minute. Telephone number to call into if you'd like to chat with me is 888-815-9756. I've got a Tex-Mex lasagna recipe for you that you might be interested in. And tomorrow, my guest is going to be Gloria Burgess. We're going to be talking about daring to wear your soul on the outside. And of course, on Friday, We're going to be talking about cryptozoology, Dina Budd. Remember, you can always check about the guests that are upcoming so that you can know when you can listen in. If you miss the show, you can always listen to the archive, so I invite you to join us. On bbsradio.com, go to Station 1, look up the Donna Sebo Show, and you'll find, you tap on that, you'll see all the listings of the upcoming guests. We'll be taking a break now. We'll be back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. I mentioned that I had a Tex-Mex taco lasagna. I love Mexican food. I like Mexican spices. I just think they're awesome. But sometimes we get so busy, we'd like to have something that's real, real easy to make. And this is something that can be taste-pleasing. And you've got a couple of options when you cook this recipe that you can work with. So you've got some real simple things, real easy to make, and I thought I would share with you. So if you've got that pad of paper and pen handy, you can just get busy because we're going to be sharing it with you right now. Also, if you want to call in and chat with me, 888-815-9756. Now, this is what you're going to need for the Tex-Mex taco lasagna. You're going to need a jar of your favorite taco sauce. You're going to need about a pound's worth, 16 ounces. Then you're going to need a jar of mild salsa. Now, again, your preference. I like spicy, so if mild is your thing, that's great. If you want it spicier, use whatever pleases your taste buds. Then you're going to need about, 4 ounces of Spanish chorizo sausage, and that needs to be chopped up. I like that chunky. I don't like it too finely chopped, but, again, it's your choice. It'll come to about a cup when you chop it. Then you're going to need a can of Southwestern-style corn, and you drain that. You're going to need 1 egg and 1 container, a 15-ounce container of ricotta cheese. And you're going to need 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh cilantro and then 1/2 teaspoon of ground cumin, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, and then 2 cups of your shredded Mexican-style cheese blend. Now, keep that in mind when you're thinking of your salsa heat, because dependent on your Mexican-style cheese blend, that can be adding extra spice. So again, just think about it before you get something really, really hot, unless that's your preference. And then you're going to need a package of oven-ready lasagna noodles. And I would say if you wanted to use something else other than lasagna noodles, if you had, let's say, a wheat sensitivity, then I would say use some corn tortillas. That would work as well. Now, this is what you do. It's so easy. All you have to do is preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Now, you take your taco sauce, your salsa, 2/3 cup of water, and you mix that together. That'll just take you less than 30 seconds. Then you want to combine 3/4 cup of your sauce mixture with your sausage, your Spanish chorizo sausage. and you want to put that to the side. Then you want to combine 3/4 of a cup of the remaining sauce mixture with your corn, and you put that to the side. Then in a medium bowl, you're going to take your egg, you're going to beat that lightly, stir in your ricotta, your cilantro, your cumin, your salt, and a half of your shredded cheese. Now, if you didn't want to use the spicy cheese, then I'd suggest using an extra sharp cheddar cheese, whatever your preference is there. But a half a cup of your shredded cheese, and spread 3/4 of a cup of the remaining sauce over the bottom of your 3-by-9-inch baking dish. I recommend also spraying your baking dish before you put anything in it, because often I find that that's a happy cleanup tip, I guess is what I should say. Now, if you're going to use the noodles, you put 4 of the noodles on top of the salsa mixture that you put down, and then you spread it with half of the ricotta mixture, your reserved chorizo sauce mixture, and a half a cup of your shredded cheese. And you repeat that with 4 noodles, just like you're making lasagna. And then you put on the rest of the ricotta mixture, your reserved corn sauce mixture, and another half cup of shredded cheese. Then you put your remaining 4 noodles on top of that and the sauce, cover it with foil, and then you bake until the noodles are tender. The casserole is going to be really hot and bubbly. Now, this is going to take about an hour. And you want to uncover this, and you want to top it with the remaining half a cup of cheese and bake until it's melted. That'll take another 10 to 15 minutes, and it'll get nice and brown. It'll just be golden brown. And then before you cut it, let it sit and stand for about 10 minutes. And if you want to take this to an event or an activity, all you have to do is put it into something that's going to insulate it, and it just travels beautifully to whatever event or activity you're going to participate in. And the flavors are great. You can use your corn tortillas if you want instead of the wheat noodles. That's your preference. It really works out very, very well. And it gives a different texture when you go to bite into it. And just, you know, check it out. If you want a little bit of a crunch to it, then go and maybe put the tortillas in a little bit of oil, cook those, and then, you know, drain them, obviously. But they'll have a little bit of a crunchy texture to it when you go to cut it. But either way, this is a dish that you're not going to lose with, and it's going to be a big hit wherever you go. So I just thought I would share that with you. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Now, again, tomorrow my guest is going to be Gloria Burgess, Dare to Wear Your Soul on the Outside. Very inspirational stories. Great gal, and I know that you will enjoy her. Yesterday I was mentioning, or the day before, I don't recall which, we were talking about dreams a little bit. Dreams are very important because they are like a window into yourself, but they also can be precognitive. And I thought I would share with you a story about someone, and we know there's so many records of dreams telling the future or giving insights to people that they utilize. Cicero, the great orator, had a number of experiences with it. Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius, he had that, and he cured himself. In fact, this is one of the earliest recordings of a dream and its value, and just about any culture that you go into, they'll talk about dream interpretation. In fact, among Native Americans, there are often meetings with people when they will talk about the dreams that they have, and there will be someone, an elder, that is respected for the interpretation of dreams. Why? Because they give you an insight into so many things, and it's a safe way often for the intuitive processes to work within an individual. Well, there is a surgeon, Galen was his name. He became a doctor because of his dream. His father received instructions in night vision from Asclepius, the god of medicine. Galen should pursue a career in the field. So he studied mathematics, logic, and philosophy and began his medical training. Now, at the time when he did this, Roman law forbid dissection on human bodies, so Galen supplemented his study of anatomy by dissecting dead animals. Anything that came his way worked. And eventually he became a physician to gladiators, and his skills increased because he became so famous by what he was able to do. and he was an advocate for working with dreams of his patients as a factor in treatment. Fascinating story about a fascinating man. There are so many people that have had experiences with dreams that have warned them, encouraged them, influenced them, changed their lives in ways they never would have dreamed. Keeping a dream journal is often a very good thing. This is Donna Seabolt. We'll be right back here tomorrow with you, same time, same place. Your dreams are a window into your own soul. You're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Why not use that informational resource to help you see where you possibly can take your life? It's a wonderful resource. This is Donna. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Seabolt Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Seabolt Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.